This is a production of Cornell University.
Meeting will come to order. Thank you. Welcome to the fifth meeting of the Cornell University Graduate and Professional Student Assembly, March 26, 5:32 p.m., Malott Hall, Bach Auditorium. Thank you, everyone, for being here. The first item is a roll call of the voting members. Randa Adra, Kyle Albert, Brian Alkemeyer, Stephen Ahn, Nicole Baran,
here.
YJ Chen,
here.
John Chechulevsky, said he'd be a little bit late, Evan Cortens, here, Andrew Elliott, Carl Firkenhoff,
here.
Marquise Hawkins,
here.
James Keach,
here.
Allison Nash,
here.
Our newest voting member, Elizabeth Newberry,
here.
Rebecca Robbins,
here.
Eric Smith,
here.
Mia Tutel, Michelle White, Crystal Wilson. 11. We have a quorum. The executive made the decision before the meeting to unseat Randa Adra, who has two unexcused absences. The plan is to reseat her after this meeting, but as you know, some of our votes are very close. The bylaws, well, take my word for it. The bylaws allow us to do this. If you don't take my word for it, read the bylaws. The other thing I would say is first a special thanks to those of you who are here, who are on time, ready to start the meeting. Understanding that I am preaching to the seven people who are not here, the executive would sincerely appreciate if you could let us know at least 24 hours in advance if you're unable to attend a meeting. It's very difficult to plan an agenda when you find out 3 hours before the meeting that half the group can't be here. With that, we move to our first item of business, the approval of the minutes. Are there any corrections to the minutes from March 5th, 2012, our last meeting? Any corrections? Seeing none, is there any objection to the approval of the minutes? Seeing none, the minutes are approved. Awesome. We move now to reports of officers and committee updates. A quick reminder that our business is a little longer than usual, so to try and keep them short. Executive committee, next meeting, voting member elections. The meeting after that, officer, committee chair, and UA elections. There's a page of information, join.cornell.gpsa.com. Faculty award, soliciting your nominations, award.cornellgpsa.com. Anything else?
Yeah, they're due April 16th. So if you were planning on nominating someone, make sure you get it in by that deadline. Thank you.
Marquise? Appropriations. Chris is in Japan. If he were here, he would say probably something like, vote yay on Resolution 12. Communications, Steve Ahn. Thanks, Steve. Next, Finance Commission, Mia. Mia is sick today. She had two quick updates. First is that the GPSAFC annual budget seminar will be held on April 7th from noon to 1:30 p.m. in Goldwin Smith 132. Please come if you have any questions about the annual budget submission process. And finally, the deadline for annual budget submission and summer SPRs is April 27th. I am guessing, though I'm not 100% sure, that is the deadline for some SPRs for this summer and annual budgets for next fiscal year 2013. So that applies to the vast majority of our groups. So if you represent a field organization or any other organization, April 27th, very important. Anything else, Mia? Nope. Graduate Professional Student Programming Board, YJ.
This Thursday, April 9th, from 7 p.m. to 10 p.m.
March 29th? Thanks, RJ. Student advocacy, Rebecca, you don't have to take your time. You've got 15 minutes. You can do your update and then your thing.
Okay, bye.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, so this is the deck that we're going to prepare presenting to the university council on student health and welfare. No, student mental health and I think that should be welfare.
University Council on Mental Health and Welfare, I think.
Sorry, it's not full. So this is next week, next Wednesday. So these are the results of the Diamond Fest event that we did last December. So the purpose of this is to give you guys a little bit of insight into the event itself, talk about some of the findings that emerged through the conversation, and get your feedback on the solutions that we're really proposing to the administration or the administrators and faculty that come to the meeting of University Council on Student Mental Health Welfare. Okay, so this is our student advocacy committee. Mary Ann, I think, is the only one who's here today. In the back, you guys can. Yeah. And there's any who were missing. This is the committee that's planning the event and does most of the data analysis. So, lots of data to you guys. And so, to start at kind of square one last fall, we said, okay, how can we have a meaningful discussion about issues that are community facing, but also make it a meaningful discussion so that it's not just kind of a town hall format where a lot of issues are voiced and not a lot of progress is made. So we came up with this idea to have an issue-focused event, and then we kind of were sitting around with what do we target, and something that was commonly articulated by our peers was mental health and wellness among graduate students in particular. So we chose this of all of the issues that are out there, and we came up with a format. I did too many of these last night. Too many bills. Okay, so the formula for getting graduate students to participate, we got this actually at the Ivy Summit, is something roughly like distance from office divided by food squared. So with that being said, we... Sorry, this is too many bills. It's not going. Okay, there we go. So we just held a Monday night in December. It was a year period week, so classes were done, and undergrads were studying, and graduate students, we found it was a really good time. So we tried to know between when exams and grading would start. So we had, we chose Monday night, we coordinated with Chris Porta and Brenda Wicks, who is our grad kind of representative in the graduate school, and set the time, and at the Big Red Barn, really cute and festive, and these were actually organized the Okay, so the table decorations were from the Horticulture Department. One of our calendar committee members was in the Department of Horticulture PhD. So she coordinated that, and it was really bare bones. You know, we used what we had and what we were good at, and really came up with something effective. So we were actually sponsored by the graduate school. This was not just the FA fund that contributed to the event. And we had a great lasagna dinner, vegetarian meat options, and dessert as well. Then Vice President Murphy delivered the keynote address. She spoke for about 15 or 20 minutes on what the university is doing and how they're approaching the issue of mental health and wellness. So the format was about 15-30 minute talk from Vice President Murphy, and then we broke out into a discussion among the participants at each table. Each table was led, and there were two kind of last person, or there was one person who led the discussion from the advocacy committee. He also spread out and divided the tables. And then there was also a note taker, which was really key. He had someone sit there with a laptop and transcribe exactly what happened over the course of the dinner discussion. We had 60 students attend, 60 graduate students, and then 15 health-focused administrators. So we reached out to Gannett, the graduate school, and a few other areas. So in the discussion, we actually gave each discussion leader a script or a series of prompts. And so we kind of methodically went through and said, okay, these are the four questions, and then went through every table member to get the answer. The first was, what do you do to unwind? The second was, what's the current state? And then we solicited the thoughts of the attendees on how the university can improve. Then we did a qualitative analysis of the data. So we split up the transcripts among committee members, and each pair would review two transcripts. And they, for those of you who aren't familiar with qualitative coding, they went through and iteratively just made labels for whatever they thought. So line by line, they said, okay, this person is talking about like pollution or mental health and wellness or obstacles or different areas of things they do to unwind. So that's kind of where we are now. And the first question, what do you do to unwind? Logically, fell into kind of four common buckets of socializing. These are just some sample quotes on the right-hand side. Socializing, engaging in physical activity, involvement in the community, which is actually interesting to see, is being common, and then relax or sleep, meditation, or just getting to sleep, fell into that last bucket. Then next, moving on, the current state of mental health. These were the most commonly articulated challenges. Lack of publicity. People don't see the value or don't know the information about events going on campus. There's a stigma around socializing, and it's hard. Sometimes people have to be in their lab until 5 o'clock, and events are happening at 4 or 4:30. Resources were underutilized. Sometimes the graduate students know, like generally, the things exist. They heard some informal presentations during orientation, but they're just not, there's still some unclarity on where specifically to go when we need help, be it for counseling or other things. Lack of knowledge, kind of pertaining to the resources, but then also in terms of helping oneself and helping others, like knowing the warning signs within our peers or the students we're teaching, et cetera. So that's the best we do. Workload, capacitizing, which one we can't do too much about. But then graduate housing also is not serving the community with something that's commonly mentioned. All right, moving on, one more before the solution. Individual differences. Some of the things that hindered a really solid community and efforts specifically towards mental health were individual differences and cultural differences for how people like to relax and what kind of gets us individually to our happy place. Depended on the individual. Disclosure and how to reach all the graduate students, which we're overcoming now with our listeners and some of the things that the GPS I think have actually done this year. And then last was overcoming a stigma among our colleagues. Going out of having, being away from the lab and taking away from research time. So improvements. We separated them into two buckets. Improvements kind of fell into like tangible programs, like things that we could potentially do tomorrow, versus kind of macro level normative culture aspects. So this first bucket was these tangible things that we could hypothetically propose to administrators of the graduate school. The first being centralized resources for graduate students, like a database or not a database, a dashboard or something where you go and you know as a graduate student, this is where I go to find information. That was a common articulation of something that's missing. A need for better, more physical graduate space. A lot of the comments were about the graduate school. Some of the things I got being overrun with graduate students or with undergrad, and location concerns and a few other challenges with the physical space. Access to health and wellness resources. Gym memberships were extremely costly. This was articulated in like almost every single conversation. Exercise classes not conducive to graduate student schedules, or you have to wait a really long time to get into classes. Events and programming were kind of across the board more and better. Food is a great attractor, were some of the things that were mentioned. And then training also. This is an interesting one. Training kind of initial when you arrive at one hour, just kind of the general orientation, but then ongoing training in terms of TA, you know, if we're working with undergrad. And our colleagues, too, how do we recognize warning signs in terms of mental health and wellness? And then also, university-wide education on health and wellness and life balance is really interesting to see in the data and something that graduate students were interested in. And now this is the second group, which are kind of these big level, you know, macro level culture change kind of items. So building more of a sense of community, tearing down some of these stigmas that there are around socializing and spending time with peers. Colloquials that were articulated as being a good place to get over that challenge. A strong and supportive learning environment and a need for a joint issue. Collecting, you know, kind of disparate groups with administrators or would have you to have a discussion about these issues and how to work towards them. All right, so that is all she wrote. Yeah. So that being said, thank you for your time. I'd love any feedback you have. I know that some of people were more at the event. If you think anything's missing, or if you want us to go back into the data and look at some of the things that emerged. But I thought there was value, if nothing else, just to talking about the format of this event and how, I mean, food is a great attractor we've seen so many times, and soliciting the feedback of our peers, because oftentimes as leaders, people approach us with issues and concerns about our community. So this, we found, was a really great way to say, okay, well, let's work towards a solution together.
We have about 5 minutes for questions.
Something missing, or do you think it could be conveyed better in this meeting, John?
I don't think anything is missing. I'd like the Johnson School has this event called Destination Johnson, and it helps people orient to Ithaca and the school. And that might be a good place to look to see what kind of programs are already running to help introduce the community to these students.
Yeah.
So that's just something to talk.
Cool, thank you. Is that something they do before your
campus?
Oh, okay.
Now, but there must be some items in there. Everyone's here for that event.
Okay.
But that may be something for the future.
Cool. So they bring in accepted students.
Right.
Okay. Cool.
All that.
Yeah, that would be great. Thank you.
Question up there?
Yeah.
One, I was just wondering if you could send this to the listserv, the presentation. The second thing actually was mostly just a comment. So I was there, and one of the things that came up repeatedly, and you also touched on, was this the cultural piece.
Yeah.
And how I was really struck by, just in the conversation, how much of a barrier that is for some people, the different, like when you have international students, have just a very different form of socializing. And you know, it's different than sort of what I guess Americans might think of as being the normal way to sort of attain balance in their life. Mm-hmm. And I thought that was just really interesting. And because graduate students are so international, you know, what would be sort of some concrete ways that the administration can sort of address that in a way that's productive?
Mm-hmm. I guess. Yeah, that's really helpful, thank you. Because mm-hmm. one of the hopes of, or my hopes of this presentation is to really get into some of the nuance in the data, and mm-hmm. that was definitely a recurring theme, and maybe pulling it out and saying this is a really big challenge, and highlighting that instead mm-hmm. of, you know, just listing them all, which kind of connotes a sense of equal importance. Mm-hmm. So that's a great point. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
We'll do. In Canada, we ice fish, so the real change coming down to the States. I wonder if you could elaborate more about the graduate student housing. What particular concerns people raise?
Yeah, definitely. What's that? I think I had a quote.
I don't believe you did.
No, I didn't.
It just says, does not serve the community.
Okay, that actually was the quote. Throughout the quotation. But it's at the comment was death. It does not serve the community. But that would be something I could definitely go. Would it be helpful to have more quotes, like more data on this?
Like, it would be nice, like you said, you coded it all. Maybe
yeah.
It would be useful to see what the numbers are like, you know, how many comments were coded a certain
yeah.
way.
Okay. Good idea. That could be helpful.
I was going to say, actually, we can talk more about this later, but a lot of this stuff overlaps with things that were said in the GCI 5 years ago.
Yeah.
It might not be a bad idea, since it has been 5 years, understanding, of course, that we only have 2 meetings left, to write some sort of a small write-up about this
yeah.
that the GPSA could then adopt as a resolution and transmit to administrators as a kind of GCI part two,
okay.
following up on some of those concerns. What progress have we made? What more do we have to do?
Yeah.
Because I know that, for better or for worse, some administrators have started to see the GCI as a kind of checklist. So it could be useful to say, well, we identified this concern. Graduate student housing was one concern. However, concerns are still being expressed 5 years later, something like that.
That's a great suggestion.
Understanding time limits
yeah.
and so on and so
mm-hmm.
forth. So it doesn't need to be, like the GCI took a year to write. It doesn't
yeah.
need to be like the GCI.
Okay.
Well, and to follow up with that, you might be just amazed by how much of the same things, you know, when you really dig into the GCI, how much of the same things will come up over and over again, even in that, I mean.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's just, mm-hmm.
I see Kent Hubble nodding, so I know we're on the right track.
In his lesson in the GCI, and I think it's great to update the GCI, even if it's just a quick summary,
mm-hmm.
you know,
yeah.
because it is an incredibly useful and important document.
Yeah.
Are there maybe one final question?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Do you have data about that might be useful to numbers in
yeah.
different departments?
Great stuff. Totally.
Unless there are further comments, let's thank Rebecca and her committee. Sure. So with that, we move to the next item on our agenda, namely Resolution 12. Let me see if I brought up the PowerPoint in order to close down the PowerPoint again. I also should note that I just noticed a small typo on the agenda. The third one listed under unfinished business, second presentation, resolution altering staffing, that's resolution 10. So there's not a separate one. That's 10. 13 is the big red barn. So 13's on here.
Twice.
I'm not trying to publicly shame Nicole. I want to make sure you don't get the numbers mixed up. So this is resolution 12. We've allotted 1 minute. The decision was made to allot a mere 1 minute to this because there was basically no controversy about it 3 weeks ago. So unless there are, Chris isn't here, like I say, he's in Japan, but unless there are particular concerns or further discussion on resolution 12, so this is an amendment to the bylaws. I believe it doesn't amend the charter, does it? No, it doesn't amend the charter. So this requires only a majority of the members in favor of it. So that's 9 yes votes. So are there any further comments, questions, heaven forbid amendments to resolution 12? Seeing none, is there any objection to moving directly to a vote on resolution 12? Resolution updating the role of the Appropriations Committee? Seeing no objection, green placards. Those in favor, please raise your placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. Those opposed? 0. With a vote of 11-0, resolution 12 is adopted. What did I say? 11-0. 11-0. Great. So that gets us to something maybe that'll spark a little bit more discussion, namely our old friend Slope Day. First, I wanted to speak a little bit before we move back into discussion on this resolution. As I see it, we basically have three different options as relates to the particular, the one line concerning slope day. We have basically three different ways to go. One is to maintain the wording as amended, as we amended it 3 weeks ago, and that is basically something along the lines of, if slope day wants to change the way things currently are, they need the approval of the GPSA. So that's language that was modeled after Cornell Cinema. Option two is the original wording, to say we prefer that it be free, but if it's not, here's a maximum dollar value. And then option three is quite simply to say we expect that Slope Day continue to offer free admission, understanding that Slope Day has been very clear with us in saying that they believe $3.50 is not adequate, and that would likely result in a rejection of GPSA funding. And they would then charge whatever they saw fit. We wouldn't have control over that except to, I don't know, whine about it, I guess, which we can reserve the right to do. The GPSA certainly has done that in the past. They have also said that even though they wouldn't be required to, they would continue to maintain a liaison position on their executive if that were to happen. I wanted to say, understanding neutrality as chair and so on and so forth, I would strongly, strongly prefer that we adopt in the course of this meeting either something along the lines of option two or option three. The reason for that is, and this may not have been clear 3 weeks ago, that the slope day, that the process for planning for slope day 2013 literally starts the day after slope day 2012. So it doesn't, I think some people suggested 3 weeks ago that maybe we could wait to see what the artist was for 2013 and then decide whether how much we want to pay, or maybe wait 6 months and see what Slope Day asks looking at their budget. Those aren't options. That's not possible. Slope Day needs to know what their budget is going to look like as of the end of this semester, which means that if we maintain language as it stands right now, as Resolution 11 has been amended, then either at our next meeting in 2 weeks or 2 weeks after that, Slope Day will come to us and say, can we charge X dollars? Can we charge up to X dollars? Basically, what I am saying is, let's save ourselves the time and further discussion and have that discussion now, rather than having it in 2 weeks. It's not like we get to have another 6 months. We'll have to just have it next month. So that's why I suggest two or three. That being said, if we were to go the route of number two, that dollar figure is where we would want to focus the discussion. To that end, I sent an email to John and Noel. This is a direct quote from Noel's email today. It reads, in regards to a ticket price, we planned to charge no more than a $7 ticket. As we've expressed to you and other members of the GPSA in the past, we do not plan on asking anywhere near as much as alumni tickets. So that's where that stands. $7 maximum, they're saying. So never mind that $10 figure from before. Finally, Bill, not to put you on the spot, I went ahead and I threw your graph in here. I don't know if you want to speak about this at all.
I mean, it's just, I kind of try to calculate how much our contribution would be based on what we're already putting forward in our grad activity fee on top of what the grad students would pay at different attendance levels and at different prices. And so I kind of looked to see what they initially requested was the big solid red line on the top there. The dashed vertical line represents attendance from the last year based on our survey. And so you can see we fund at, if we had the same amount of attendance at the $10 maximum we were talking about last meeting, we would actually be funding Slope Day. It'd be more funding for graduate students than they even initially asked for this $6 funding level. Then the dashed horizontal line shows that back in December, November, we talked about they'd be happy with a 450 student. And so it kind of gives you some kind of point of reference so that even if attendance drops 20%, to get to that level that they deem acceptable, you know, maybe we should be around $5 or $6 a ticket. So it just kind of breaks down the total amount of money going per graduate student ticket versus graduate student, just hope they total revenue.
Yeah. Thank you, Bill. So I was on the survey committee from last year, and I looked at some of the numbers in a little more detail. If we didn't directly ask how much would you be willing to pay for slope day, what we did ask is how long did you stay and how much did you like it? A little bit of guesswork. If you assume that the people who liked it the most and stayed the longest are those who are most willing to pay, which I think is a reasonable assumption. If you take the sort of top two boxes on both of those, well, one's a Likert scale and the other one's a sort of time boxes, you know. Anyway, the people above the median, I think that gets you to about, I forget exactly, but about 10% of graduate students attending. So if you look at Bill's handy chart, if you say 10%, where do they need to get to that 450? That's about $8. So that $7 number fits right about in there. However, if you assume that everybody who attended last year will attend next year, even if there's a charge, that number is closer to $4. With that said, I have no further comments. We'll move now into formal debate. Since we are a little pressed for time, it would be ideal if you kept your comments to 60 seconds. I'll give you a little tap when you've got 10 seconds left. I'll maintain a speaker's list. Likewise, amendments, so on and so forth, are entertained. Anybody want to speak? Steve.
So they offer $7 as the price for the ticket. Is that what it can still be accepting our funding?
That's a reasonable question. I think Melissa is around. Melissa, perhaps you can speak to what Noel meant.
Yeah, so with that option, with the $7 ticket, the committee for 350, I think what we're looking at, I think for us, is option two would be the best, and that number would be flexible, and that if we were to change the number at a later time, make it less than $7 at the time, but we have the maximum set. And then we do want to have that about accepting the 350.
Thank you, Melissa. Melissa's here on behalf of the Melissa, right? As I've told people, Melissa and Melanie are wired to the same spot in my brain, so I mix up those names. Melissa is here on behalf of the Slope Day Executive to answer questions. Carl?
I kind of put a question about the plot that you put together. So you have it plotted as cost per grad student. We threw out this activity where, you know, we're appropriating something like $2.50. That's for every single grad student.
Yeah, it's based on what they would have, what the contribution would have been for every single grad student.
Sure.
I mean, for every grad student, you just divide it up evenly as if we would have paid for it in full and then not had any kind of ticket. Just so for a point of reference for me, because that would be a hard time kind of contemplating.
No, I guess my other question is that, like, to me, the way I interpret the way we fund this is we give $2.50 for every single grad student, but if only 30% of grad students go, really, that's like saying that's almost $10 from the grad students that went, and no money for those that didn't go.
Yeah, is that just an alternative way of? Just because we traditionally think about it per student, and so I wanted to kind of think, you know, if you're paying $10 and you had, you know, 15% admission, how much money is SLPD getting from graduate students in general, from both the graduate ticket fee and the beginning to kind of see it in the total revenue? So that's why it's made for grads, it's probably better for them.
Marquise?
Okay, so I've done a sort of impromptu survey of the people that sent me here, and they don't want to pay any money for Smoke Day. And so I'm sort of bound by that, and so I'm going to move that we strike the previous amended language and adopt a version of number 3 stating that the Smoke Day Programming Board shall provide free admission to graduate students.
Is that a reasonable summary of your... There's an amendment on the floor. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Nicole. Discussion on the amendment. Hands? Seeing no discussion, those in favor of the amendment? 1, 2, 3. Everybody ready? Those in favor of the amendment? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. Those opposed? 1, 2, 3. With a vote of 7-3, the amendment is adopted. We resume formal debate on the resolution. Yes, Veronica.
Just to sort of throw in another, I'm going to still go and say, just from another graduate school that does actually go, I think about half of our, I have the geological sciences group, and about half of our community goes, which is like 20 students at least, we're small. But a bunch of us actually go, and I asked our last meeting whether everybody would still go if we had to pay on top of it, and it was pretty much a yes, so nobody would go. We would just say it. Roll the roof and take the money
and put it up to use it for ourselves. Because, I mean, with the level of people who actually go from
the whole
crush on all the schools, it just doesn't make sense for us to draw extra money. So it just kind of like a temporary story. Thank you, Veronica. Further comments on the resolution? No further comments on the resolution? Rebecca?
This will likely be good for the best, you know, again, as a responsible person. So, it's hard right now for me to expect, you know, a number that would be agreed upon by that group or whatever it looks like. So, it seems like it's kind of a good, you know, history that we do keep going back and forth. Maybe it might not be a bad idea to have one of our language, whatever that means. Or, I guess, I'm saying to not.
Right. Yeah, I agree with you. I think it's useful to have the discussion in those precise terms. What I would say on the coming back and forth, with language like this, Slope Day has fairly consistently indicated that they will reject our funding and charge whatever they like. That may be $7. It probably won't be $25. Melissa, am I incorrect? Okay, thank you for clarifying. So they would reject our funding, they would charge $25, and as a courtesy, not because they're required to, they would continue to have a seat on their board for us. What that would also mean is that they would turn down the funding for the entire cycle, so that's 2013 and 2014. Just to be totally clear to your constituents, this does not affect the Slope Day that is 2 months from now. That one's already paid for. This is Slope Day next year and the year after that. They would then be treated as a new Byline-funded organization, which means they need to collect signatures from 10% of graduate students, so about 680 signatures, and go through an additional level of scrutiny to ask for further funding. That would be in the fall of 2013. So that's the soonest that the GPSA would have this discussion again, if that were to happen. Bill?
I just want to clarify that last point. What do you prevent the Byline funding?
Sorry?
I just wanted you to clarify that.
So if Slope Day rejects our $3.50 offer, they would then be treated as a new group for future Byline funding cycles. So that would be the fall of 2013. They would have to get signatures. This is the same for any group. It's not punishment for Slope Day. This is, you know, if Big Red Bikes were to want to become Byline funded by the GPSA, this would be the procedure. They need to solicit a number of signatures, and they need to reapply to the GPSA for funding at whatever dollar amount. The only requirement is that they ask for at least 50 cents. That answer the question? Eric?
Question for the Slope Day. Let's say that you do reject our 350. What is the thought on your committee of losing money in this deal if so many grad students decide we're not going to pay $25, let's say no one shows up. Is that not a concern?
It is definitely a concern, and my violations and that also our relationship with graduate professional students is a concern. As far as the financial matters, though, I can refer you to our administrative director who handles all the financial aspects if you want to know or need any information about that. But
that's John, right?
Yes, John Brown.
Looking at those numbers, the ones that I referred to before, if you take the top two boxes and multiply them out by $25, so if you assume that the people who liked Slope Day the most, above average, and stayed above average, so that's about 10% of graduate students. If they all went and paid $25, Slope Day gets less money than they would if they got if they accepted the $350 and charged no money for tickets.
And that's assuming that 10% would in fact pay $25.
Right. Right.
Yeah. So you guys on the committee are not concerned with that?
That is a concern. Obviously, we do not want to go down that path ourselves. We don't want to be charging professional students the same as all of them get $25 credit. We would be much more to go with the $7. That was the second option of the amendment. So that we have a small number of supporting people and that amount to change as needed.
So, sorry, I'm interrupting.
Go ahead.
So as far as I can tell, if we say, they should provide free admission, we'll give our $350, you want to reject it, so you're going to get less money. So, it seems like this is our best option because they're shooting themselves in the foot if they reject the $350.
So, all right, no. No, they do not have a publicly known amount of money that Slope Day has in revenue. Our percentage is very small based on what they get from undergraduates. So it's not like us not being in revenue that really can do their revenue.
The total income from the activity fee off the top of my head is about $250,000. Graduate students contribute whatever 350 times 7 is, so about 21,000 of that 250,000 total. Veronica? Pardon me. Allison, then Veronica.
I wanted to speak on behalf of in support of this amendment, mainly because I think what we're struggling with here is like there's a fundamental disagreement in the value of Slope Day between undergraduates and graduate students. So if I can put a value, a monetary value on that, we're never going to agree. So I've heard the strong language of this because after all, it is a community event. It's just to bring people together. And I think that the stubbornness of like charging graduate students and not charging undergraduate students, taking that position, is losing a chance to create a real university community. So if it's going to come to that, then we can say this is our chance to say what we think Slope Day should be. So if we think Slope Day should have a charge, then we should decide on that now. If we think it should be a free community university wide event, then I think we need to say that and use this strong language.
Veronica?
So we're actually just a handful of the graduate student population. Is there any chance we can I hate to say this, maybe we push this back further than it's already been pushed. And this is only just Slope Day, it's not like some major crisis. But it might be kind of interesting to see how the rest of the graduate student committee would feel about having paid $10.50 instead of $3.50. Is there any possible chance we could pull the graduate student committee through like the email?
All I would say to that, if I may, so the survey that I'm talking about was a random sample of all graduate and professional students last year. That's good data. It was rigorously collected. It's accurate. I'm happy to provide more information from that if I can. The soonest we can send out another buzz email is 3 weeks from now. Let me try and guess. We sent out a buzz email a week and a half ago. One of the links was join the GPSA. So maybe not the sexiest thing ever. That link got about 30 clicks. So this would be people clicking on something. We can't send reminders. We can't have direct access to their emails. We can only send through the list. We can only do this once. So we would be saying, please click on this survey and tell us your thoughts. There'd be a very, very strong self-selection bias. We'd get the people who felt most strongly and felt least strongly, and we'd have a very, very low response rate. Very low. I would estimate 5%, maybe. I don't think the data will be better than what we've already got, which was a 65% response rate of a representative random sample. That indicates, like I say, about 10% of people like it more than average and stay longer than average, and those, I think, are reasonable proxies. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, I was just wondering if I could just say, otherwise...
Yeah, sorry to be the rain on the parade. I don't think that's possible. Next on my list is Nicole.
Yeah. Well, I was just going to say that I think Allison very well articulated my sentiments as well. And what I think is most striking is that I realize that in terms of the exact funding provided by graduate professional students, we are kind of a drop in the bucket. But what would be somewhat shocking to me is to have the GPSA's offer of $350 rejected by the Slope Day Programming Board would be a very clear statement that our community is not valued. And I find that kind of surprising because they would do it at their own expense. You know, for someone who's a social scientist, it's just kind of a remarkable thing, and I guess I just wanted to comment on that.
In the back is that Stephanie. Sorry, my binoculars don't work very well. Next on my list is Bill.
I agree with everybody's discussion and comments. The only thing I would like to say is from an department actually does have free access participation in Slope Day. You know, we pay for Cornell Cinema and a lot of other things in this 5 minutes. You look at survey results, some of them get, you know, 15, 10% usage, and we have no problem funding those groups, and then they also charge ticket prices. So it's a little bit hypocritical for us to say, you know, we want all or nothing. But then we have, you know, get $4 machines to go to a movie from a cinema on top of our $11.50 subsidy that we give for every graduate student. So this is what I think about. Our people do really enjoy Slope Day, and you know, they would be willing to pay the money. And for everyone else who pays $3, something that maybe something that could be something that's only used by that one student that doesn't use Cornell Cinema or other things that are important too, is something you should at least consider.
Eric?
That's a good point, but I'd just like to reiterate that as it is, $350 from 100% of the population is the most money that, in our best estimation, that Slope Day is going to get. And that's, strictly financially speaking, for Slope Day, that's the best dollar that we can give. Really. Maybe that's just my thing.
Alex?
I would just add briefly to what Bill was saying. I understand that, you know, they have traditionally been charged twice, but the difference is that, well, I guess undergrads aren't being charged for Slope Day. You know, I know they're charging more for
about $18.
So that, those are agreements that we have, you know, that we've made, so I feel like that's been different. You know, how those decisions of what cost should be made has been done more collectively.
I just want to let you know we've hit the amount that we had allocated for this on the agenda, which is perfectly fine by me, but the longer we go, the longer the meeting has to go. Marquise?
I'm going to call a question.
So the question has been called. Is there a second?
Second.
Is there any objection? Seeing no objection, let me hold on a second. There are 13 voting members in this room, which means that all but one have to vote in favor for this document to pass. If the document fails, then we revert back to expired language. So let me throw this out there. This is a little backwards of me, but without compromising my neutrality, if you don't feel you can vote in favor of this document, would you please make a motion to postpone this vote for 2 weeks? Seeing no motions on the floor and seeing no objection to the previous question, we're now in a vote on Resolution 11 as twice amended, as it stands on the screen. Would those in favor please raise your green placards? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Those opposed? 0. With a vote of 12 to 0, Resolution 12 is adopted. We move now to the next item on the agenda, Resolution 10. Thank you, everybody. Resolution 10. I think that's a PDF.
Yes.
Everybody can see that. View full screen mode. Is that vaguely readable?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Marquise.
Yes. So this was the resolution that I brought up, I guess, 3 weeks ago now. I sent it out to the LISTSERV and altered it. And I got some responses back, but I decided to keep it as is. So essentially, this would change the way in which the committee staffing system works, in that the field representatives and voting representatives would be responsible for serving on a committee themselves or finding one person in their field to serve on a university or internal committee. So I think that we talked about this at length 3 weeks ago, but the chair decided we're going to continue to talk about this.
I'm happy to. I mean, I'm not going to cut off discussion. Okay. If there are comments or questions, debate, amendments, likewise, Matt.
Okay. I have one clarification. So I know we talked about last time having to do with ability for the field clubs to receive funding. And so the point of clarification is that just the field line of funding, or is it their ability to get any type of funding from the GCSA?
Well, I decided that was certainly one of the suggestions. I decided not to link this to field funding at all. And that it's just simply one of the extra duties that you're required of as a local member or as a member of the GCSA. So I didn't put the funding aspect in.
Okay, so it's
just
funding.
Right.
Exactly.
It's worth throwing out there that if that were to change, we'd also need to amend the funding guidelines.
Right.
Next on my list is Steve.
I guess one thing that I have is the Susan Wilson. Right. So I don't see, maybe I missed something, but I don't see any specific set of responsibility to any of these measures.
Right. Well, essentially, well, you said you don't speak. Well, the executive members are voting members as well. So they, in essence, if it was in effect this year, we would all be required to be the ceremony committee. Or
who's sort of trying to keep track?
It would be the executive committee.
Okay.
Similar to how the executive committee keeps track of the absences of the members, but let's be honest, that's not necessarily too harshly enforced. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, you're not supposed to miss more than one meeting.
Well, if I may,
yeah.
So the field, this is the funding guidelines again, not the charter or the bylaws that say
right.
If the executive vice president, so that's Nicole's position, notifies the chair of the finance commission, that's Mia's position, of a sustained vacancy in a position, then their field funding can be frozen. And it's only the field funding. So if I may read into what Marquise is saying, I think this is more about a statement of principle. If there were to be some kind of enforcement, like field funding being frozen, if you don't sit on a committee, then that would again require an amendment to the funding guidelines. It's also worth noting that off the top of my head, I think there are only 25 field organizations that receive funding right now. We have 100-ish field representatives. So even if we did enforce that, there's a large number of voting representatives who aren't associated with a field funding organization, so we couldn't freeze their funding because they don't get any. Next on my list is Mitch.
One quick thing that I would bring up is the fact that timeline, which I think has been brought up before, but I want to reiterate it. I know some of the field reps elect their representatives halfway through the semester. So if this goes in, then it would be good to consider that and how the second half people
fit in. It's my understanding that if someone's being seated in January, the person who was the rep for in the fall, I would still stay in that stead if they'd like to, or the person that they designate would stay in that stead on one of the committees. So I don't think it would affect people who are transitioning out mid-year or whatever.
Not.
We
also sort of not allow the incoming January.
Right.
Yeah, there's many committees that have the opportunity for you to sort of get engaged even midway through the year. It kind of depends on which one, but there would still be plenty of opportunities, I'm sure.
I would also throw in that's the way it currently stands right now. Committees are staffed, never mind this resolution, committees are staffed from June 1st to May 31st, and that's how they count their membership. So it's already an issue. If somebody stops their position at the end of December, then, you know, they're, as with any other commitment, you know, they either have to continue serving in that position or find somebody to replace them. So that this resolution doesn't actually affect that issue. Next on my list is Liz.
I just wanted to say something, and I appreciate the sentiment behind this particular resolution, because getting more people involved in GPSA was a good thing. And I think that the modification to the first resolution serve on or tied into some of their fields serve on really does recognize the fact that those issues that we brought up last meeting with putting a burden on the field reps who are already maybe have time constraints. I also want to reiterate the incentive idea, and that might be something that would be touched on by the committee. So it's something I think that going forward we should think about what sort of incentives or
important,
I guess,
for
you. Yeah.
Can I clarify?
Yes, Bill?
If you, technically from an unoccupied department meeting, they always say we need to make sure you sign in because then that ensures that your graduate is getting money from the GPSAFC. Is that true? Or is it just like a room that goes around for a long time?
Sure, you mean sign in to these meetings?
Yes, sign in to the members. I know our government department is pretty active. We have a couple people in different committees. So is that true? I mean, do you get some kind of preference from UGSAFC based on the attendance?
All I can say is reiterate the language that's in the funding guidelines, which is that it's the responsibility of the executive vice president to notify the chair of the finance commission of a sustained vacancy. What does that mean? I mean, in theory, it means it's the responsibility of the executive vice president to take attendance at all the meetings. That's in the bylaws too. So in theory, it means that they look at that attendance list every meeting. They watch for sustained vacancies. I'm not sure what that means, but that's what the language is. That predates anybody in this room. Well, maybe not Nighthawk, but most of us. Okay. So that
it's maybe possible.
So it would be the discretion of the executive vice president if they were to decide. As for preferential treatment and funding allocations, no. This would just be freezing existing allocations if there were to arise a sustained vacancy. While we're talking about funding guidelines, rumor has it that amendments to those will be appearing on the agenda for the next meeting, which means that, say, if R10 were to pass tonight, we could also incorporate an amendment that might be something like, and you get an additional pony if you fulfill your committee assignment.
If a department is sending a lot of people to participate, you could say they should have, you know, a better opportunity to get their events funded over someone who's not active.
Right. That if that were to happen, again, it would require specific language in the funding guidelines. The GPSAFC just follows the guidelines as written. Next on my list is Veronica, then Carl.
This is a really great, especially if we're getting more people involved. My only concern is that, taking our department as an example, we're just such a two or Earth and atmosphere, and we have two defensive representatives in theory. One of them is, unfortunately, here or not. But, and so they're actually only like 10 grad students, and we're 40. And so, is there going to be any accounting for the fact that you're going to be pulling from a pool of 2 of 10, and you have one person on a committee, and then the GPSA representative, and instead of, and we're small, so like you all decide so small, and so it's something like, I don't know,
I guess in a situation like that, it'd be just more of pulling from the general 20s. I mean, certainly it's going to be at the discretion of the executive committee, but from my standpoint, I think that it would just be one person from the field specifically. So,
okay,
yeah.
So there will be kind of an adjustment for that.
Right.
We actually have fields with only one person.
Right.
If you can believe it.
Well, they're not a GPSA member.
Right.
We have not
yeah.
convinced them, that one person, to be a field member. But,
this is,
but.
I think basically what you're getting at is the way that the graduate school divides up fields.
Yeah.
So there are situations where you may have a department with a large number of people, but then the field is split in different ways and different graduate students are in different areas. For those of you who are continuing on in the GPSA next year, this might be something to explore in a charter or bylaw revision process, namely understanding that we've long had a vacancy issue. It's gotten better. We're up to about 70%. It's better than it used to be, but we've long had a lot of vacancies from fields. A way to address that might be that fields could consolidate for GPSA purposes and send one representative and then have a field organization that covers, say, both Earth and atmospheric science or whatever that would be. Certainly there are fields where something like that doesn't make sense. I mean, there's only one field of music. It represents all people in music, and it lines up 100% with the Department of Music. But, you know, there are over 100 fields, and they're all very different. Next on my list is Carl.
So I have a couple things. First, additional clarification. So with laughter, the last meeting when we discussed this, I was wondering a little bit more about the current status of the field funding and vacancy of the field representatives. And as far as I can tell, to bylaw, the only way to make a field representative vacant is through a voting of the field, the students in that field. Once a field has a field member, they're you know, okay, great. Just attendance doesn't make them vacant. Then the other thing I would like to specifically address this resolution, I personally would like to speak against this resolution. I like the idea. I like the idea of getting more people involved. As we've been saying, there's hundreds of field representatives on the rolls, but I don't know. I mean, you can look around, we don't have 100 field representatives in this room. So clearly finding a way to get increased participation regularly, I think, is important. But I think there's easier ways, not necessarily easier ways, but I think ways to doing that with just how GPSA meetings are run and organized, the information conveyed, that can get increased participation without this thing of saying, oh, now I have to be on a committee too to do this. That I think it's better to be like, you know, let's work at these other angles to show that, hey, actually coming to meetings has value. And then once they're invested in the value of coming to the GPSA meetings, they may be willing to join committees, become voting members, and move in that direction.
Point of information. Do you have any specific suggestions?
Well,
I think we've been moving that way with the last viable fund. It's changing to more regular meetings, trying to do the caucusing within the meetings. I think specifically one way to do that would be to make the caucusing more purposeful and actually make that a part of the resolution writing process, so that when a resolution is brought, the very first thing is, before it can be discussed as a group, it's discussed in the caucus, the new caucus revises that and makes revisions, so directly sends those revisions to the visual office, and then it's presented to the floor. Something along those lines, so that way the field representatives, they can't vote, but they can then see their direct, they can give comments, but they can see the direct hands in the writing of the resolutions that are brought up.
Great. Thank you, Carl. Next on my list is Nicole.
Yeah, I agree with both of your sentiments, actually. The one thing I would say is it's obviously a chicken and the egg problem, is that, people who don't feel as if they're engaged with the material don't, sort of want to get engaged, but you need to find a way in. And realistically, we think this has come up repeatedly, but actually a lot of the work in resolutions comes from committees. I mean, realistically, if you want to be involved in the process of writing a resolution, the best way to do it is to be on a committee. And it's sometimes not clear in the debates that we have on the floor that that's what's happening, that there's all this behind-the-scenes stuff going on in committee meetings and with people, but that's the reality of it. So, unfortunately, there's just this chicken-and-the-egg problem in that regard. But, I don't know.
I will throw out in my parliamentary historian role that both the U.S. House and Senate require that. In fact, when a resolution is introduced, it's immediately referred to a committee. It has to pass out of the committee before it can come before the whole. A little closer to home, that's what the SA does. The SA specifically requires that resolutions go through a committee. That has not been a tradition of the GPSA, but perhaps this might be a way to get both of those. If the committees were very active and involved, then maybe requiring resolutions to pass through those would make sense. Anyway, just a thought for those of you thinking about charter and bylaw resolutions in 2012, 2013. I have no further people on my speakers list. Carl?
I just have a question. I don't know a lot about the structure of the student assembly, but do they have similar field representative roles?
No. They just have a voting body.
And they're all required on committees.
They're not required to be on committees. This year they required to do outreach events, but that was a sort of ad hoc idea. Derek is our liaison.
Speaking, I think they were required to be on task forces, which are sort of each year they've got an ad hoc task force structure in addition to the state committee structure. And so each of them were secretly most of support task forces. But that's what also being developed.
It's worth throwing out while we're talking about the SA structure. One significant difference, number one, that they don't have this sort of two-body structure that we do. They don't have field reps and voting members. They just have voting members. When they elect those voting members, they're done by either the entire student body, if that's the case for the president or executive vice president or whatever, or they're done by an entire college. Those elections, I think, in every single case this year are competitive. That differs a little bit with the GPSA, where our elections are not traditionally very competitive. And of course, we're elected by the people already in the room rather than by the entire student body. This year it was not contested,
okay.
That's true.
I thought you said it was heavy competition.
Pardon me. Every election but the president, the person at the top, was contested. Actually, the UA reps weren't contested either. In fact, they left three vacancies on the UA reps. But I mean the sort of college level or at-large voting reps were all contested. Steve.
So I don't know if this is even mathematically possible, but on the off chance that all the positions are staffed,
I think
that's
something we
I wonder if I can throw in on this. Our internal committees are not a set size, so they can. We've got a certain number of vacancies on other at-large on university-wide committees, and we can't send six reps to the SA dining committee, say we've got one spot. But our internal committees can be as big or as small as we want them to be, which is a long way of saying there will never not be enough spots, because we could simply have, theoretically, a student advocacy committee that has 40 members. That's perfectly in accordance with our bylaws as it stands right now. Another way of saying this might be, if we found ourselves with a situation where we've got too many people on committees, we could have more committees. We have fewer committees, say, than the SA does, for comparison. Does that help?
Move to call the question.
The question has been called. Is there a second?
Second.
Seconded by Carl. Is there any objection to moving to a vote on Resolution 10? Seeing none, the question is on the adoption of Resolution 10, a resolution altering the GPSA committee staffing process. Since this amends the charter and the bylaws, it requires the higher majority, which is to say two-thirds of the voting, of the seated voting membership, which is to say 12 people. Would those in favor please raise your green placards? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. 8 in favor. Those opposed? 1, 2. With a vote of 8-2, the resolution is not adopted. We move now to new business. Is that correct?
Yes.
Yes. A resolutio regarding Big Red Barn dining options.
What?
Sorry, there's a typo in your file name. The rest of it.
Well, that's okay. That's not the actual title.
Yeah, I should have told you about that before.
Okay.
Nicole.
So I was kind of hinting at this, and no one joined me, but I went ahead full force anyway. So basically, the Big Red Barn, as Rebecca mentioned in her presentation, and I think was expressed also in some of the sentiments in the survey, you know, it should be a place that serves the graduate and professional student community. It's not clear to me that at this point it is, and a big part of it is specifically during dining hours, so during the hours of whenever it opens at 8 or 9 to about 2 in the afternoon, it's not a place for graduate students. Where we feel comfortable. There's a lot of undergraduates, and there's a lot of reasons why that is true, specifically related to Cornell Dining providing the food there, and that, I guess, is a place that's frequented by many graduate students. The GCI, as we've sort of been talking about tonight, sort of articulated a larger vision for graduate and professional community space that really, you know, again, fosters a great social space for graduate and professional students to get together, to hang out, to feel comfortable, to meet other people, and the role that it plays in graduate student identity and just general well-being. And so I was thinking about what would be a good solution to this. And every single person, pretty much, that I've ever talked to about this, when I said, "Do you go to the Big Red Barn for food?" they say, "No, there are only two places I eat on campus, Temple of Zeus or Mandeville." I don't know if this is true for anyone else, but that's definitely true for me. And what's interesting about them is that they are not Cornell Dining providers. That's not to say that Cornell Dining doesn't have good food. It does sometimes. But they are not, the Big Red Barn, which should be, again, the graduate professional student space, is not meeting the needs of graduate professional students, period. So what I basically did is I put together a resolution that asks the graduate school, who is in charge of the sort of management of the Big Red Barn, to consider essentially a request for proposal process that would allow outside vendors to bid to provide the food at the Big Red Barn. And this is essentially exactly the process that Mandeville went through a few years ago. And what they did is they sat down. They had a big, man library cafe committee, cafe implementation committee. And they sat down and they said, "What are the things that we want to see in this space? Like, what's important to us and for Mandeville?" As you might imagine, it was things like sustainability, locally sourced foods, good vegan options, cleanliness, a good culture that people wanted, like a good space they wanted to be in. And they sort of outlined what they wanted to see in that space. And then they put out this request for proposals. They contacted local food vendors. So, you know, basically they sat down and said, oh, we like Gimme Coffee and we like Stella's. And at the time, the Cafe Juna's that was in downtown, which is ultimately the people who opened Mandible, CTV, a couple other places. And they basically contacted them and said, hey, do you want to come in this space? We have tons of people coming through. This would be really popular. You would have to submit a proposal that meets these sort of core values that we've articulated, and sort of went from there. And they had several vendors bid for the space, including Cornell Dining, and they chose the people that ultimately opened up Mandible. And basically, I said, wow, that looks like a really great model for something that we could do in the Big Red Barn. And so that's essentially what I'm proposing to do here. The first resolves clause creates a Big Red Barn advisory board, which I imagine would act, at least in the first year, very similarly to the Cafe Implementation Committee created for Mandible. And then going forward would be sort of a general body that would say, you know, hey, is this space meeting graduate professional student needs? It would be sort of a constant format for I guess, people to discuss that. The second one essentially asks for the graduate school in Big Red Barn to find out more information about what graduate professional students would want to see in a more general sense. So not just however many people end up on the advisory board, but sort of how much would you be willing to pay for a individually pulled espresso shot that's not burned? For example. And then the third resolves clause basically asks the graduate school to get information about the operation that Cornell Dining has had, just for some historical context, and also if we do go forward with a request for proposal process, it gives you can basically provide good information to the vendors that are considering making a proposal. And then obviously the final thing is this request for proposals. So that's the idea. Let me ask you guys any questions.
So we're now in formal debate on Resolution 13. I'll recognize people as I see them. Mitch?
I think it's a great idea. I created the Big Red Barn occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that I like about it is the food is in. But it's also really cheap. And I think that that's like something important about making the Big Red Barn a good dining option for students is to have it be affordable. Because mm-hmm. a lot of them aren't on any sort of money from our parents or anything. So if we don't bring lunch, we're going to have to pay $8 or $9 for it.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. So that's one thing that I like about it currently, but I also recommend it.
Yeah. And two things. One, if we did even go forward with this, of course, Cornell Dining would be absolutely encouraged to submit a proposal to be in the space. And so it could end up that nothing, that they are still the food vendor there. The second thing that is in the text of the resolution but is not mentioned is actually that I forgot to mention out loud was that the current incentives for graduate students to join a dining plan that actually would theoretically provide cheaper food from Cornell Dining. Well, there are no incentives. There are, in fact, disincentives. As I say in the text, so it would cost you $300 for $250 worth of Big Red Bucks, which seems kind of backwards to me. Most of the undergraduates get it as part of a meal plan, and all the staff and faculty dining plans provide a huge, very significant discount for using Big Red Bucks to buy food at Cornell Dining facilities.
Carl?
Yeah, so I also like to go to the food advice, partly because it could be my office. I also like the food they have there. The peach salad is cheap and awesome. But I also really like this idea of looking and investigating different possible options. And one thing I don't know if it makes sense to add an impossible amendment to this or something, but one thing I hear repeatedly is that Big Red Barn used to be open year-round. Now it's closed during the summer. The dining operation is, and I think for a location for graduate students, for it's supposed to be serving graduate students and have a dining facility in it, it needs to be open year round. In my opinion. So I don't know if that's just something that the advisory committee can look at in the proposals, or if it's something actually worthwhile to add to the resolution.
I will mention that. So this resolution doesn't amend anything, which mm-hmm. means that it's the normal threshold for passage, which is to say a majority of those present and voting. Mm-hmm. Furthermore, it doesn't require prior notice, which means that we're voting on final passage today, unless somebody motions to postpone to the next meeting. All that said, if you want to offer an amendment, I would encourage you to go ahead and offer an amendment.
I would want to leave it up to the author if that makes sense to have that sort of thing.
So it's possible. Where I was actually thinking would be a good spot is I talk about how the GCI had at one time proposed extending food and coffee service hours at the Big Red Barn to provide food and coffee later into the night. But that might be a natural place to sort of note that it could also be open during the summer when many graduate professional students are on campus, remain on campus.
I would suggest parliamentarily that if you're suggesting a particular action, that it makes sense in a resolve clause.
Yeah, so I kept the resolve clause. The resolve clause is to sort of state what we would do going forward, and I've left it up to the advisory board to articulate explicit things. But I did want to sort of provide a justification for why, like, certain things would be important. And I think that the advisory board would, going forward, see at least some of the main things that they would like to have addressed. But
thing is, though, sorry.
So, anyway, I mean, that...
No, that was my take on the resolution, so I don't see a need to amend that.
Okay.
Great. Seeing no motions on the floor, we continue informal debate. Alex?
So I actually would close to answering that question. I was going to ask about, because you mentioned one of the whereas clause, undergraduates have to be appreciated for the Big Red Cross, but there was no result about that. So I'm just going
to answer my question. I sort of just provided a because this is why we want to at least have, alternative approaches considered is essentially the argument.
Next on my list is Rebecca.
My question is, that was the most pressing thing on in our personal conversation that I had the other day over coffee, the fact that we don't have an incentive, but it is our institution or our youth, our grad center.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's powerful. You don't think it exists? Or would it be hard to get into kind of second form?
I mean, I think it as a separate whereas clause, it changes the intention of this and makes a request to Cornell Dining rather than to the graduate school, which is how this is currently aimed. I mean, I would certainly think it would be a good additional resolution if someone were to want to write it. Yeah.
It's worth throwing in on that point. Of course, we have two more meetings. Resolutions like this don't require a whole rigmarole. They can simply be offered. If somebody were interested in offering a resolution calling on Cornell Dining to explore incentives for graduate students, that's certainly an option. Another option is that there is an SA Dining Advisory Committee to which we get a representative. I believe we possibly explored adding a person, but I don't know if that ultimately happened. They've been staffed. Okay, so maybe there's not a vacancy. But even if there isn't a vacancy, the meetings are still public. See Marquise for more information. Next on my list is Nighthawk.
The only question I had is on the first resolve clause, starting in line 59, about the composition of the Big Red Barn Advisory Board. So I asked Nicole about, because it said administrators, faculty members, and graduate professionals. And so I understand the administrators up to the professionals, and I assume faculty, because they might also be using the dining option. Mm-hmm. And so I was just wondering about other staff members who aren't administrators, if they would make sense to include them, or if just why the composition is that way.
That's the main thing. I think it's, I mean, I would assume administrators who are involved in administering the Big Red Barn would be relevant. Again, because this would be focused on providing the graduate special student space, with, you know, that then the advisory board should be comprised of representatives from those constituencies. That makes sense. I mean, that is the logic.
Yeah.
I'd be open to amendment if you.
If we're including the faculty, the faculty members just being included because they might also use the space?
They frequently do use the space,
okay.
and because they frequently go with their students to the program, like their graduate students to the program.
In that case, I would like to propose an amendment simply that, and is this an interested faculty and staff members? So just after each state faculty and staff before members on line 59?
That's fine with me. Second, is that how it works?
The amendment is seconded. Is there any?
Just one of those members.
Oh, faculty.
Oh, sorry. Interested faculty and staff members.
Yeah.
Okay.
Good catch. The amendment is moved and seconded. Is there any opposition? Is there any objection? Seeing none, the amendment carries.
Can I make a motion to extend the meeting?
If I can throw in, it's 6:58. I have two more people on my list. We have 10 people in the room. Quorum is 9. So we can keep having the meeting. There's a motion to extend the meeting by 5 minutes to 7:05. Is there a second? Seconded by Marquise. Is there any opposition? Seeing none, the meeting is extended to 7:05. Next on my list is Bill.
I just had a question if you had talked with Ms. Barla and how the possibly worth having her being set for the university and then having an outside company like running half of the bars, like the conference.
Yes. So actually I should have mentioned this. I met with Chris Korda. She's fully in support of this. In fact, helped me write most of the key language. I also met with Howard Raskin, who is the chair of the CAFE Implementation Committee at Mandeville, with Chris Korda, and he provided a lot of the background. And I also met with the director of Cornell Dining, so she's aware of all the language in this as well.
Next on my list is Steve.
So in your list for the proposition of the advisory board, one missing group is undergrads, and I'm not sure if that's appropriate for this, but I imagine Mandeville did have that on.
Yes, that is true. Again, this is about what serving the needs of graduate and professional students. I don't know. This one I'll feel kind of strongly about, to be honest, but that's just.
Is there an amendment? Seeing no amendments, I have no further names on my speakers list. Are there any further comments on resolution? On the resolution, resolution 13. Seeing no further comments on Resolution 13, is there an objection to moving to a vote? Seeing no objection, the question is on the adoption of Resolution 13, a resolution regarding Big Red Barn dining options. Requires a simple majority of those present in voting to pass. Those in favor, please raise your green placards. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Those opposed? 0. With a vote of 9-0, Resolution 13 is adopted. We move now to the final item on our agenda, namely open forum. Are there any comments in open forum? Seeing no comments on open forum, is there a motion to adjourn the meeting? Moved by Carlos. Is there a second? Seconded by Marquise. Is there any objection? Seeing none. Our next meeting is 2 weeks from today in this room. We'll be electing our voting members for next year. Electing our voting members for next year. Tell your friends. Thanks, everyone.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.